Hola, ¿qué pasa?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Pizza Mine.
It's Bryce here. We're just having some fun at the studio. We got two exchanges.
I'm really excited because one of my favorite exchanges that I actually use a lot.
Every day.
IDEX is IDEX. On the show.
IDEX.
The president of what was formerly known as AuroraDAO, the most confusing branded thing in crypto, has since rebranded to IDEX. So we now all know what a genius Alex Warren and his company are.
Yeah, this is a really cool and actually super, super necessary platform in our space. It connects to your MetaMask. And so your MetaMask is your wallet. It holds your private keys.
Also your ledger, your trust wallet, everything.
Yep, exactly. It connects to your software wallets, your hardware wallets, and you could trade and still own your own private keys.
Super, super important. So we're going to be talking to him today, and also
NextChange.
What's NextChange?
NextChange, first off, NextChange's got a beautiful app. Highly advise you guys to go download it. But it's a venture, innovation, and media platform. It specializes in fintech and blockchain and AI. So NextChange is doing a lot of really interesting stuff, and you guys are going to be learning about them with Matthew Aaron, part of our hybrid series, and a special guest.
Michael Nye is here.
Formerly known as Shil Nye, the science guy. No, just kidding. Shil Nye. Okay, let's jump in.
Alex Warren, CEO, co-founder, IDEX. Welcome to the Crypto 101 Evolvement Podcast, collaboration with Matthew Aaron, myself, and Mr. Michael Shil Nizzy Nizzy Nye.
That's me. What's going on, guys?
What up, dude?
Alex, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
For people that don't know, who are you and what is IDEX?
IDEX is the number one decentralized exchange. We're the largest in terms of users, volume, transaction count, pretty much any measure you can think of. But we like to kind of clarify the decentralized part and really refer to it as a hybrid decentralized exchange. And it really has to do with kind of what parts of the application are you decentralizing and how are you approaching it. The first version of DEXs, they were pretty much fully on the blockchain, which meant it was more decentralized, but you had a lot of problems basically because blockchains are slow and expensive. So if every action you're doing on an exchange, you have to pay to the network and wait for the network to confirm it, it's not going to be a great UX. So over time, we've seen projects bring more and more of the application off chain. And we have a kind of a particular perspective on that with our hybrid approach, where you have a centralized exchange that you do all of your actions in and a decentralized fund custody. So we never hold any funds, but everything that you do on IDEX happens in real time. So we think it's kind of the best of both worlds of centralized and decentralized. Centralized exchange is the one everybody's probably most familiar with. Coinbase, Binance. The key part about decentralization is around what happens to the funds. So when you deposit on one of those platforms, it goes into a wallet that they control. All of the trading that you do, it's within their own system. Nothing's happening on the blockchain. Mm-hmm. And then when you go to withdraw, you essentially request your funds back from the exchange and they send them to you on the network.
And who controls your keys there?
So during the process of trading, they're in charge of it, right? And you hear, not your keys, not your Bitcoin, right? That was a refrain that a lot of people in the industry were saying. And the emphasis being that they control the crypto. If they get hacked, if someone comes to them and says for whatever reason that they can't service you or to take your crypto, there's really nothing you can do about it.
All right, hybrid. So as you just said.
Yeah, so maybe actually I'll do decentralized first because I think it sets up hybrid well. So decentralized exchange, there's, and this is where I think there's a bit of a confusion in the space because people use that term a little bit loosely, as did we when we launched, admittedly. And I think decentralization, there's different pieces of what's called the software stack that you can decentralize. So what most people are referring to is fund custody. So really flipping that centralized model where instead of giving your cryptocurrency to someone else, you're in control of it the entire time. Everything you do is requires authorization from your private key. So that's really kind of taking back control. And then there's other components of the exchange. So for example, the order book. And the question is, where does that order book live, so to speak, right? And in a fully decentralized exchange, it actually lives on a blockchain, meaning when you create an order, you then have to send it to a blockchain network. That network then mines that transaction and then places it for others to view, but by connecting to the blockchain.
Right.
The big challenge with that is every action requires using the network. So it's expensive. You're paying, in the case of Ethereum, you're paying gas, and then you have to wait. So you can imagine for market makers, if they're trying to cancel and update orders pretty quickly, a decentralized model is not going to be very well suited to them because you're paying a cost every time and you got to wait. So it's just not a great trading experience. So we've come up with the hybrid model, which is really about that balance, right? What do you do off-chain? What do you do on-chain to try to take advantage of what we think is the real selling point of decentralized exchanges, the custody piece, while insulating users from the other elements, the other headaches that can come from decentralization. That's where I mentioned we've got the order books, the balances, really the whole exchange component is off-chain. You can almost think of it as a centralized exchange with decentralized fund custody. So when you deposit, instead of depositing into a wallet we control, goes into a smart contract. And then everything you do off-chain in our centralized infrastructure, create an order, for example, is accompanied by a signature so that we can send that to the network for settlement. So you can think of the smart contract as managing the funds while the exchange manages everything else around the UX of trading, balances, order books, trade execution, etc.
You know, the DEX is like the holy grail of exchanging and buying and selling crypto. Everybody wants to control their keys, never have it leave their custody. It is also anonymous. What's the future of exchanges? If you have KYC AML, is that almost like off the point?
Does it defeat the purpose of a DEX?
I don't think so, but we definitely have people debate us and say it does, right? So again, back to my earlier comment of like, what is the real consumer like pain point of a centralized exchange? Most of them, they might not like KYC, but I think that is in some ways the reality of the financial system in which we live. We'd love to see that evolve over time. You know, it's a tool for law enforcement to help catch criminals. Mm-hmm. We think there are better tools than financial surveillance,
right,
but it's the reality of the world we live in, right? And certainly any exchange that interfaces with the traditional banking system has gone through that growing pain, right? They start out with this, hey, we're different. It's crypto. It's this new revolution, this new different thing. And then as they grow, these other pressures start to press on them. If you ask people like what sucks about trading on a centralized exchange, pretty much not much, right? Like the UX is great. Like, let's be honest, right? The UX is great. Liquidity is great. They got customer service.
Right.
The thing that sucks is I leave my funds there and they might be lost, right? Yep. So that's really the big pain point of the centralized exchanges. So, and now to your point of this open, permissionless, you know, no identifying information required, like we believe in that future.
Right.
The question is, how do you get there? And the first product we built had that ethos in mind, but it wasn't a good product and nobody wanted to use it. Right? Because it was slow, it was costly, it was hard to get liquidity because of all these like kind of drawbacks. So the reality is the technology is just not there to create the product that will both attract users and have those properties. So we're kind of taking a different approach, right? We're looking at what is the environment now? How can we build a product that we think will get all of those users, keep the self-custody element? And I think self-custody is interesting because we look at this as not just you and I being able to custody, but it's really about integration of all custody solutions. So you and I will be able to trade against larger custodians who are trading on behalf of their customers. Mm-hmm. That's really how we see you kind of pooling liquidity is, whatever your method of custody, you can be in control of that process from end to end, but you can plug into this open network of a smart contract for escrow and settlement and trade with anyone else. So you get to choose your method. But the reality is that because we have a role in operating it, there are some regulatory things that we need to abide by. The question is, what does the future look like? Will the technology advance to the point where you actually can turn this into a fully decentralized network in the sense that we're actually not operating any of these pieces and you can actually incentivize people to do those other functions. So support could be incentivized through a token economic system, right? The system could pay out for those to do those other jobs and all that other work that's required to make it run.
So what about listing fees, man? Do you have listing fees? How much are they?
So when we originally launched, we didn't have any sort of listing fee. What we found though was that we do have some costs in terms of talking to projects, either bringing them into the funnel, and then now we have to do audits of every project that comes to us. We do have a super small fee. It's a few thousand dollars simply to cover those costs.
I think something that's different, and correct me if I'm wrong, about IDEX is the fact that you can't necessarily pull an exit scam because everybody owns their own coins. I mean, you can't have a situation like some of the other exchanges out there right now that we see that are forced to shut down and people are losing their money, or the founder exits or leaves or dies or something and people lose their money because it's locked on an exchange that they actually don't own the keys to. That's kind of what makes IDEX unique. Am I correct about that?
That's absolutely right. And we were talking earlier about, you know, is there a point to decentralization if it's not open, permissionless, and if you have KYC, for example? And this is exactly that point. Something happens to us, something happens to our site, our company, right? you don't have to worry about your funds. They're always yours. You can always go directly to the Ethereum network. So unless the Ethereum network dies, in which case, you know, good luck getting any value out of your coins anywhere. Unless the Ethereum network dies, you can always get your assets back, which is just a pretty cool concept. And I think that's you know, very much in line with the crypto ethos. You know, I think one of the things talking about decentralization is I don't necessarily think decentralization is an end goal. I think it's an interesting tool to help alleviate some of the negative effects of centralization, right? So we talk about, people talk about like data sovereignty. Like how can you use decentralization to take back control of your data? You know, Facebook and Google have been making billions of dollars off monetizing it. People are now trying to think about, you know, how can you give that control back to the user? This is similarly around exchanges, you know, control of the assets. How can you allow people to trade with one another while still giving them ultimate control? And that may be an end user directly. It may be an entity on behalf of many users, right? We don't think that everyone's going to want to manage their own crypto, right? The be your own bank slogan is great if you trust yourself more than a bank. And I think there's a lot of people that, if they admit it, don't trust themselves more than a bank, right? So that's a lot of it as well, is giving choice. You know, if you want to be the individual going direct, great, we can have you. If you want to trust a third party who manages it on your behalf, they can trade with them as well. So it's really about that open approach to custody, which we see winning out long term.
Now, do you trust yourself more than a bank?
Depends on the day.
that's true, man.
Depends on the day.
That is 100% true. And it's not that I actually trust myself more than a bank. I don't think that's it. I trust the systems and institutions in place that the bank has wrapped up in it, like the FDIC insurance, the you know backed by the U.S. government, support and what have you. Like that's what I trust more than the bank itself.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And I think you're seeing those sort of systems being built in crypto, right? Like we were talking with other companies, they're doing an insurance process on your transactions. And it's like you pay a small fee to be a part of this, and then your transactions are insured like up to a certain amount. And they're basically just like, look, we can see like how many of these are actually, you know, keys are getting stolen. We can calculate the risk. And if you want to participate in this pooled risk, this insurance plan, we think we can make a business out of it. So it's interesting to see these same products being reinvented in a more open, kind of transparent manner. I think that's a lot of what gets me excited.
So I just want to go and ask this one more time to be very clear. With these exchanges, we are surprised all the time by how hacks and things are happen. You know, a founder dies, private keys are lost, APIs, somehow take funds. You do a huge social hacking experiment and people get socially hacked and what have you. And even with the Binance case, you know, if it wasn't for their safe fund, I mean, they would have problems because, they're just luckily smart enough to plan for that and actually care about their customers. And CZ is one of those guys that's willing to take the brunt of anything that's getting thrown at him as he was doing AMAs like 5 minutes after, which
on
was
on 30 hours of staying awake or something. I know, kudos to CZ.
I know, kudos to that. He wasn't afraid of any question. He was like, I'm gonna answer this is what it is, and I'll do more, whatever. Is there any way people can take that can get funds stolen from your account besides them getting personally hacked?
No, so the risk, there's always the risk in blockchain that there's an error in the smart contract, right? So, people ask me, like, how do I know the smart contract's perfect? And you're like, how do you know Bitcoin's perfect, right? Like, time is one of the things, right? You can have people, you have people audit it, right? You have people pour it over, people take a look at it, but like, this whole stuff is new, right? So, Zcash had a vulnerability, reported recently.
Bitcoin had one too.
Luckily they patched without people knowing, but this stuff is new. It's still experimental. There was a big kind of, kerfuffle when Vlad Zamfir, he made a tweet about Ethereum, like Ethereum is not ready for billions of dollars of value on it. Like it's still experimental tech. And like, I think in some ways that's correct. You know, there's the space is unique because it allowed for this funding model of ICOs that got a lot of tension, got a lot of capital into the space. But in many ways, the tech is still very much in its infancy. So I think it's really interesting to see kind of that tension of a tech that's not yet ready for mainstream, but has a spotlight on it. So, we're doing our best to build the best products with what we've got.
Right on.
I love it, brother. Thank you so much for coming on, man.
How can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Alex Wern, WEARN. IDEX.io is the website, so come check out our trading platform. We got links to Twitter and Discord in the footer if you want to come join our community.
All right, brother.
Thanks, fellas. Good to be here.
Yo, yo, we are here with Juwan Lee and Mr. Michael Shil Nye. How are you guys doing today?
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
It's so great to be here, first of all. My company is NextChange Group, and we do three things in NextChange Group. We have a media company, we have a digital investment bank, and we have a digital asset management. So the media really is about large-scale events. We run Hong Kong Blockchain Week. We used to run Hong Kong FinTech Week. And we have content, we have a social network, and all of those things drive all the flow, the deals, the community, and then we're able to market, invest, and give access to various different interesting products. And that funnel goes right into the two monetization points, which is a asset management arm where we're venture building, we're investing, and we are actually investing in investors. We have a digital investment bank where we're raising capital and doing M&A. So all of these things are what I call monetization points. But what it does, it allows us to see is the full ecosystem, not just one piece. We really understand what the investors are looking for, even what the investors of digital funds are looking for, the whole ecosystem from A to Z. Right now, the top of my mind, everybody, the Greater Bay Area. The Greater Bay Area is the largest innovation hub in the world. China is making sure that Hong Kong connects with Shenzhen, connects with Guangzhou, all through high-speed rail.
Yep.
And it will be 69 million people. Why is that important to me? Because I live in Hong Kong. I can go to Shenzhen in 15 minutes.
That's amazing. I lived in China for 13 years. It moves so much capital, so much resources around at the speed that you need.
Yes. So you know that when you build a bridge, you create connectivity. Well, high-speed rail will make all of this become an amazing innovation hub. But more amazing is the concentration between Shenzhen and Hong Kong. Mm. There is a border, and that border at 2024 is going to be a visa-free zone. You can walk about, do whatever you want, and we are focused on a project. What we're doing is providing the actual execution, and what we have is partners on the ground in China, allowing for onboarding, soft landing, investment, and also physical space and the reciprocating thing in Hong Kong. So we are gonna bring companies from outside the world through trusted hands to China. How about that? Is that something to be excited about?
That's something very important. Very exciting.
What I really want to know from your perspective is how do you think China is going to play a role with all of this blockchain crypto stuff? You know, we've seen the bans and all the fear that people have kind of instilled around China, but it's evolved recently. What's your opinion on all of that?
Well, first of all, let me just say that the outlet for gambling in China was Macau. So the outlet for crypto and blockchain became Hong Kong. There is actually a great position that Hong Kong is that whatever ban that took place in China, well, the beneficiary was Hong Kong. Now, what we need to do is figure out how to play in that playground. There's definitely rules around this. And so I believe that China will have a very steady hand about what they do, but Hong Kong is now dealing with the unintended consequences. Some of it is very positive.
Do you think there's more projects being built within China that are going to be successful, or do you think it's going to be outside projects that come, learn to integrate with the culture, learn to integrate the technology into these structures over in China, and they're going to be successful?
Oh, absolutely. Just because a ban crypto doesn't mean anything about the actual development of blockchain. If you actually look on GitHub, you know, Shanghai, Beijing is top 4 or 5 in the world in terms of development.
Right.
So that doesn't change at all. China is pro blockchain. It's just not pro crypto.
What misconceptions does the Western market have on what's going on in tech in China in general?
I alluded to it earlier. There is tremendous amount of development that's taken place in blockchain. And this is the biggest misconception. There were meetups every day during the ICO ban. Mm-hmm. And people were raising money everywhere.
Right. Mm.
So there is what China says you can't do. And each time they got more strict. Right. But it was happening anyway because you can't stop innovation.
So when we were in Thailand for tokenomics, you said, and we were at dinner, and you and I were sitting right next to each other, and you said something to me that stuck with me, that adoption is extremely, extremely hard to achieve, but once it is achieved, it's extremely, extremely hard to undo or erase or move away from.
Absolutely.
What do you think it's going to look like adoption-wise? Are you predicting adoption or whatever you want to call it? Does it look like a payment method? Does it look like gaming? Does it look like voting? What adoption centers are you inspired by for crypto?
Adoption happens with very little marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Adoption is effortless. Adoption comes naturally.
You were talking about earlier a little bit between being a leader and really focused about adoption, but you're also making investments or leading investors into projects, which has kind of a different mentality than just focus and aiding adoption. How do you separate the two, and how do you determine when it's important to be an investor and maybe get return on your capital and being someone who focuses heavily on leading adoption?
Good question.
There are different stages. Generally, our company gets involved after adoption for investments.
Okay.
Because we're investing capital that's not our own. In terms of helping adoption, well, that's just our, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. And our team working on getting projects that we're passionate about. And they're not mutually exclusive. So we could have something that we're working on to help to get adoption that we eventually invest in.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually want to be the whole ecosystem as a service where we do all of it eventually, but it's the stage in which we do it. We don't generally get involved as an investment early on because, as we know, the numbers are against you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? But it doesn't mean we can't be highly enthusiastic so that we get to the investment point.
And at what degree do you enter in when you say, quote unquote, after adoption? Is this like kind of after the first wave, maybe once it's been validated? Is this after the second or third wave when there's X amount of users on board? Like, what to you signals adoption?
Adoption is really not an exact number for each product because every product has a different set of rules of adoption and addressable market. But we generally get in where we start to see, I would say, stage one in terms of that it was that organic level of adoption where we're starting to see month over month numbers that they're not just 1 or 2 months, but like 3, 4, 5 months, they keep on doubling, tripling. These numbers that were seemingly not within the projections that we had. Then it becomes very interesting, I would say.
So it's more about growth rate than exact, like,
yeah, it's about
numbers.
Delta. Right. It's okay. Time and change. Because at some point, you got to pull the trigger faster than the other people when they realize what you got on.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so unique, right? Because you have multiple different subsets just within China.
You know, yes.
There's
no one China.
Exactly.
And there's no one strategy for China.
And there's no one Asia either.
Yes.
You know, you go from Hong Kong to Shenzhen to Japan to Singapore to Thailand, and you're dealing with all of these different cultures, all of these different experiences, and all these different ways and languages that you have to communicate with people in order to get your message across or what you want to build.
Yes. And they don't always like even each other.
That's true.
So just remember that. And you got to be sensitive to all those historical cues.
I love it. Well, thank you, brother, for coming on. You got any other questions, Matt?
No, I'm good. I just want everybody to make sure that they know how to find you if they want to look up your company or yourself.
Well, you know, we are on nexchange.com.
That's nexchange.com.
Yes.
Juwan, if anybody sees Juwan at a conference, go up to him, give him a big hug, shake his hand. This guy's not only extremely intelligent and great at what he does, but he's one of the funnest guys in
crypto. And he doesn't mind unsolicited hugs, apparently.
Yeah, yes,
apparently
I am into unsolicited hugs. Just don't tackle me.
All right, thank you, brother, for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, bro.
All right, well, that does it for our episode today. I hope you guys understood the importance of decentralized exchanges. To me, that's my biggest takeaway, and that's what I want you guys to take away with you.
Wait, hold on. You mean I can't just leave my tokens on Binance?
No, man.
Why?
Well, if Binance goes down, or if any of these centralized exchanges go down, your coins are gone. If you don't own your keys, if you don't, like, you know, don't own your keys, don't own your coins, right?
So I really should use something like IDEX or another DEX.
You always should. That's that's definitely my opinion.
Interesting.
You know, I like the ease and the use of, like, the user experience of these centralized exchanges, but even Binance, right? They're launching a DEX of their own, the BNB DEX. And it's the same concept where they understand it's like, you know, we're going to have a non-custodial exchange. It's not fully decentralized, but, you know, they have their own special matching algorithms and all that kind of stuff for their order books. But more or less, it's going to be all about the decentralized exchanges.
I really wonder if OX protocol is going to be
0x.
Yeah, if 0x is really going to be the thing that allows the DEX environment to take over crypto trading as it needs to be.
The 0x protocol, the Kyber network protocol.
Yeah, whatever it may be, like, who's going to be the champion that puts everyone else out of business and finally allows a DEX to be a major top 10 exchange with proper liquidity?
Yeah,
that's really what the crypto space needs.
That's true. I want to say it's going to be IDEX because I really like Alex and I like that platform, but I think it's going to be BNB.
I think so too.
Those guys are liquidity monsters.
They are.
They got their hooks in to every market maker, to every OTC firm. I kind of have a feeling it's going to be BNB, but, you know,
it's too soon to call.
It's too soon to call. I think there's plenty of room for, you know, Uniswap, and Switchio is another big one that's coming up. So there's so many of them. It's great for this ecosystem. So I encourage you guys to go out and to experiment with these decentralized exchanges, jack into them, and
Never ever enter your private keys.
Yes.
You're probably at a scam copy.
Yes. Do not enter your private keys manually. Please use MetaMask or Trust Wallet or your Ledger. You never enter your private keys through your keyboard. It's a bad, bad practice. So that's all we have for you. Time to wrap it up. We will see you guys next time. I'm Bryce.
And this is Pizza.
We're out of here.